Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And hello once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy with another week of American Tennis. Every Wednesday at noon on the UR Tennis Network, we bring you American Tennis. Also, folks, Lisa Stone's Parenting Aces program, a hit program. It's been, wow, she's been 4 years now, I believe. And golly, go to her blog site as well, her Parenting Aces. But she's on Tuesday. Also, Jason Haynes, the originator of the UR Tennis Network, is on about 2 hours from right now every Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. Steve Clark's West Coast Tennis continues to be a good hit, and as well as John Denise's Florida High School Tennis Program. And folks, if you didn't listen to last week's program on American Tennis, go back and pick it up. The one with Sammy Giamalva, you can see it if you'll go to urtennisnetwork.com, urtennisnetwork, the letter U, the letter R, the number 10, and the letter S, network.com, and it has every one of the programs. But go back and listen to Sammy Giamalva's program. It was a great one and some great insights by Sammy on some things that we need in American tennis right now. As of speaking as a former number one United States player and a top 25 pro in the world, it was a good program. Also, go to my website, chuckcreasy.net, and you can listen to every program that I've done on the UR Tennis Network the past 3.5 years now. Wow. We are rolling along 3.5 years already at UR Tennis Network and American Tennis. So every week I try to bring you something, either a great guest or some insight. Today's going to be a short program. Folks, I've got to apologize. We're right in the middle of our season and things get really busy. So some of the programs, I look for some teaching tips or some, I call them, emotional vitamins or coaching vitamins that we all need, and just some things that you can listen to on the UR Tennis Network that might stimulate if you're a high school coach or a college coach and just give you a few ideas on some things. But that's what I want to do today. We're just going to be a short program, but I wanted to talk about goal setting. And as boring as a subject as that is, it is at the heart and the crux of everything as far as accomplishing things nowadays. And if you've listened to me over the past couple years, I talk a lot about how there is so much information out there today that it is like drinking water from a fire hose. Our kids, and frankly, we do not know where to begin in trying to point people in the right direction. And I work at a place that it revolves around goal setting and doing the right thing and order. And I'm at the Citadel in South Carolina, and it's a fantastic, fantastic place since 1842, now 174 years of guiding young people's lives. And they know how to do it. But I tell people I came to the Citadel primarily because there is automatic compliance to just doing things right. And now, doing things right does not mean that you're doing the right thing, might I say. And I preach to players, especially on the tennis court, that you have to do the right things in the wrong way at first to ever do the right things in the right ways. And we get this confused. But I'm around a place that does things right. And you could argue some of the things are wrong, some of the things are right, but they do things right, so there is automatic compliance. So every one of my students, I will start out, every player, I know that there is a base level of compliance there. As I worked 33 years at a state university, Clemson University, a fantastic, fantastic experience. But in working, and this is my 46th year in coaching, I have learned that the best players will self-sabotage and often are scared to death of their God-given talent. They basically, there's no heavier burden than a great opportunity. Most athletes are afraid. And folks, to some of you this might not make sense, but I'm telling you, there are very few things that are as true as the statement that I'm making, is that people almost fail on purpose rather than have to face the responsibility of living up to their God-given gifts. Johnny Wood, in my first year of coaching, I remember the book, They Call Me Coach, and there was a quote, is that what we are and what we have is God's gift to us, and what we become is our gift back to God. And there's no heavier burden than that great opportunity of living up to the potential of what God has given us. Now, that being said, and that being said so many times in my program, that is a combination of God-given ability, opportunities that parents, coaches, and teachers give them, and then it's the desire of that individual student. I am putting this out there, and call in if you would like to talk, area code 714-583-6853, 714-583-6853, if you would like to debate this topic. But I am saying that we have never been in a worse place in the desire department, and this is why. Ability is, it's a set. It is an automatic. And you, what you're born with is what you have. Some people have more, some people have less. Whether it's God's gift or genetics, that is just a fact, folks, that you can't put in what the good Lord left out, and you start with a certain amount. But then it's the opportunities and the desire, and these work against each other. And as we have been given more and more and more opportunities, there is less and less desire to be seen out there, to the point where as a teacher, as a coach, you get frustrated. I came home one day recently, and my my wife, I was talking to her, I said, I'm so disappointed in that everything's being dumbed down. Have you heard the music lately? It's not music. It's all electronics. Nobody even knows how to play an instrument. It's just awful. It's in this. Well, what's happened to our art? What's happened to our sports? I went to a basketball game last weekend, and it was pathetic. You know, our high school basketball games now, if you've seen them, kids just run up and down the floor, play one-on-one. Kids sit in the stands, not motivated. They sit in the stands and watch their daggone cell phones instead of the ball game. For me, growing up in Indiana and basketball country, I'm going, are you kidding me? But this is very much what's going on. Our kids are getting sidelined, and they don't understand why they have to be fired up, why they have to have motivation, why that a deep desire of their heart. And by the way, being vulnerable in giving all of their heart, because if you give all of your heart, there's going to be more pain. There's going to be more pain. There's going to be more disappointment when things don't work out, but it's a lot better when it does work out. And you can go back to the old quote you all know of Theodore Roosevelt, to the credit goes to the one in the arena. And I don't need to repeat that, but look up famous Teddy Roosevelt's quote. And it's exactly the point, is that the person in the arena risks all. They get all when they accomplish, and that there's a lot of pain when they don't. So motivation is a problem. So goal setting is a problem. We can come up with fancy ways of goal setting, but in the end, without investment, without a giving of the complete heart of the individual, you're not going to ever accomplish. So here at the Citadel, I know I have compliance anyway, and then I, of course, have mentioned before that you have to get to a point from compliance to commitment. Commitment, you have the person's head, then inspired enthusiasm, the great word, comes from the Greek derivative henthēos, the spirit of God within. So you've got to get commitment, you've got their head, inspired enthusiasm, you have a heart and their soul. And then it has to go to even a different level and a deeper level. And I'm just asking you as coaches out there, or parents, or whatever, do you think about things at night before you go to bed, how to get your players better? Do you think about things when you first get up in the morning? I'm in the shower, I think about it. In the morning, I think about it. On the way to work, I'm thinking about how to help people get better, how to motivate people, how to try to get them past the pecking orders that lock them into such a pattern. And where most people think it's just about ability. Most people think, hey, I've got the genes, I've got it, and they get opportunities with that, and then they're going to prosper. They get scared to death of putting their heart on the line. So I'm going to start out the program today. I've got a few things to go through, but in the start of my book, and my preface of my book, and my two books, Total Tennis Training plus my Coaching Tennis, I give the story of my brother-in-law who was dying of he had cancer, colon cancer, at age 35, and he was my best friend of my life, growing up. He's one of those guys, his name was John, and he was one of those guys that was a manager on all the teams I played on. We double dated through high school. And there was always just a mutual admiration for commitment. And if he had his heart as big as the house, it was something that what he had. Well, he ended up marrying my sister. And boy, oh boy, for 5 years they had it was great. And it was a wonderful, wonderful relationship and wonderful marriage. And then he got the cancer at age 35, and I had to go through this with him to a great extent. Never really hadn't seen the devastating effect of the terrible disease in much, and I remember I was caught up in my coaching. I was a new young coach, and I was having to go through things, and I didn't really think that he was going to die. I just thought, hey, this is one of those things you work through. He's a young guy. He's going to be okay. But it ended up taking him. But I want to tell you the story here because it is so impacting. I started out my books with this because it really, the philosophy of your coaching and everything has to start with the commitment level of your athletes. And when we do too much for our athletes, they lose their desire. When we give them too much, they lose their desire. Too many opportunities, they don't have to have desire. Too few opportunities, usually they have great desire, but the opportunity is part of it. It's all three of the things. It's God-given ability, it's opportunity to parents, coaches, and teacher, but then it's the desire of them. So I want to tell you the story, and I start out by telling pain is often the teacher, and it just basically, I'd start out that it was a cold, rainy evening, and I was in Charlotte, North Carolina, and my mother, this was mid-80s, I think it was 1985, actually, and we were both really concerned, and we were having dinner after we went over to see him. My brother-in-law, John, he'd moved up to corporate ladder, talking about a motivated man, and he worked for the Western Publishing Company, if you all remember the little children's golden books back in those days. And John was doing great, and he was kicking it, and hit my sister, and he was doing good. But he was about ready to go through a terrible 18 months before dying. You know, during that time, I mean, the friendship and all the things that you go through, and to this day, I keep his picture in my bedroom, and I keep the picture right where I take a shower every morning. I look at he and my sister, and I remember his voice. I remember everything about it. But anyhow, that night, you know, we got to talk. I got to talk to my mother, and I basically was telling her about my inability to motivate, and then I said, I'm so fired up, I want to do a great job. I had been on the job about 9 years, and we were really, really ready to just do some great things, and I still felt like I wasn't motivating properly, and I was telling them I was doing this for my athletes, I was doing that. I set early morning workouts, I call them and ask them how they're doing, and I take them about 80% of the way, and then I was saying they back off. But my mom, she reached across the table, and she grabbed my hand, and she just said, she locked her hands and looked at me in the eyes, and she said, son, let me talk to you about a little bit about growing, what growing up was for us and what growing up is for you and how much easier it is now on the kids. And she talked about the Depression, World War II, and she and my dad were part of that greatest generation they really faced. If you think about it, the Depression, World War II, and all those things. My dad used to say that, son, from 1945, 46 to 50, they said there was a party every weekend. He said always somebody was coming home from the military, always somebody was getting married. He said, there's a lot of drinking went on, and that there's a lot of alcoholism, and these generations of people, because they're just so doggone happy to be alive. I mean, you got to remember, I mean, during World War II, the millions of people, did we lose 500,000 people in World War II? I know we lost 50,000 in Vietnam. But I know that the Civil War, we lost more people than all the other wars combined. But I don't think we lost 500,000. But we lost a lot. But there were 50 million, if you can imagine, folks, 50 million people in the 20th century killed because of World War I, World War II, and communist regimes. Just unbelievable. But he said, son, we were just so happy to be alive. We were just so happy that people partied like crazy. And then, of course, Eisenhower is great, and they had the wartime economy going, and everybody had a job, and people were working, and they just wanted to settle down and have a family. And that we baby boomers did. I was one of six in our neighborhood. We had golly, we had two, the Baker's does. I remember the Baker's had 13 kids. And, I mean, the Cunninghams had 12. And, you know, just everybody had a bunch of kids. And so, wow, what the neighborhoods we had. And then prosperity started taking off in the 60s, and everybody had a car. And then everybody had two cars. And then people started buying their kids cars and all these things. But anyhow, that evening, my mother was telling us and telling me about how things had changed so much in 20 years. And basically the ability, desire, opportunity story. So she said, look, she said, let me tell you a good story about me and my grandma. She says, we used to go down on the farm down to, I think it was Oldenburg, Indiana, And she said, I used to watch the little baby chicks hatch. And she said, if you've ever watched them hatch, it doesn't happen all at once. They just don't bust out of there. They sort of get their head out, their beak out, then their head out, and then they finally break out of the shell. And she says, one day I was watching, and one of the baby chicks got stuck. And for the longest time, I just watched and watched. And he said, Grandma came over, and I said, can I help him? And she said, no, you must, you won't, you can't do that. If you open his shell, he'll be too weak, he'll die. The way that he gets strong enough for the world is that he has to open up his own shell. And he, so basically I had learned about baby chicks, but then also that's pretty much the truth about life and about our kids. And the balance of opportunity versus opportunities versus desire. And the more opportunities we have, the less desire. And now with all the information in the information age, and it's a joke, we can go to anything on the internet and get anything punched up. And I preached to my guys, I said, you will remember nothing that I tell you unless it's combined with an emotional experience. Until it becomes important to you, it will not be important. It has to become important to you. So I wanted to make that point and talk about today about the goal setting. And with the goal setting is that I think you can lead kids to making goals, but until they're completely invested and complete, all in is the word that everybody says nowadays. They don't get it and they won't get it. And it's a tough one. Coaching is hardest it's ever been in the world, and parenting and teaching. And I think about the teaching. I went to a parochial school growing up. We had 50 kids and one nun, 10 kids in every line of five rows of 10. They used to put the smartest young lady. It was always a young lady, by the way, that was the smartest, first row, first seat. Can you imagine the least smart, I can't say the other words, I guess, least smart kid, last row, last seats, and that's the way you stayed until you earned your way. If you didn't like it, you needed to do better in school. And I thought it was a pretty cool thing myself. And it was a pretty cool thing to see everybody's name put up at the last day of basketball practice and see the kids that were cut and see the kids that made it. And we need some accountability to those things. Right now, I've got out of 13 players on my team, I've got still 6 months into it, four that have not made their mile time. Now, they know what their mile time was, they've known what their mile time was, but they skirt around making it. And I'm taking one young man today with two good runners to the track, and we're going to try again for this mile time that is very doable, and it can be done, and it's nothing outrageous, but I've got a couple good players just waiting in the wings here, or they're hoping that I will put them in without them making their mile time, and I'm not going to do it. There's no way I can do it, and it's would be opening their shells over and over and over again. You don't open people's shells. So I've got a great story about Chris Robinson, who it took him 8 times to make his mile time. And back in Clemson in those days when my teams were very, very good, you had to run a 5:15 mile. And Chris, it took him 8 times. But I wrote this short story. I said, I call it Tiger Pride. My athletes called it Morning Madness. but they had to wake up at 6 a.m. and they had to make a 5:15 mile. And Chris, it was eight times that it took him. And finally, it was mid-October, and he still hadn't made his time, wanting to quit, but knowing he would never quit. He didn't have it in his DNA to ever quit. I got my two captains, and I tied a string around one of them, and I had him pace for a 2:30 first two laps. That's 2:75 second laps back-to-back. And my second, the other captain, Mike, it's Greg and Mike, I remember the guys. Mike ran alongside at second lap when Chris was coming in, holding on to the string. It was a 10-foot piece of string tied around the waist of the pacer. And I told Chris, if you drop it, that means you quit. If it breaks, you lose. And I said, do not let that thing break. So the bottom line on the thing, even after eight tries and he was about ready to quit, he needed just a little bit of a visual and a little bit of just something that just had him focus. And he focused on that string not breaking. And I swear, Mike running or that third lap with him on the back stretch, I thought that string was going to break. But Chris held on to it. I tied a knot in the bottom of it. I said, son, when you're at the end of your rope, you tie a knot and you hang on for dear life. And he did. And they ran 2:31 first 2 miles. Chris ran a 5:11 that day. And I have had fewer things mean as much to me as a coach than to see the team carry him around the track after he made his mile time. And it took him 10 weeks or whatever to make it, but when he made it, made all the difference in the world to the team, but it made all the world the difference in the world, I believe, to him. So I cannot tell you enough about the goal setting, and that the most important thing is it's got to mean everything to the players first. And we have very few things out there that are sort of do or die. I hate to say do or die, but it's do it or be embarrassed, do it. Or we pad the kids too much with a participation trophy. They're not really an achiever. They're just part of something, just trying to make them feel good. That's the worst thing we could do. That, and then also as far as punishing people for not achieving, well, you don't want to do that, but they still need to be punished for a lack of effort and lack of discipline in pursuing things. But in doing so, gosh, you've got to be so smart and so wise now and making sure that, I think punishment a lot of times is just your ability to show them you're disappointed in them. And your ability, and you as a coach, you basically hold back, you're not holding back love, but you basically, just remember this, do not give attention to the bad kids, even though, and I hate to say bad kids, but the underachievers, because they'll hold back your achievers. You give them too much attention. Folks, philosophy of coaching today, instead of just goal setting, should be never open up people's shells that work for you. They have to break out of their own shells. They have to learn through their trials. And if they do, they will own. They will not just rent their accomplishments. They will own their accomplishments. And that's probably going to be one of the hardest things ever now, with all of the network padding and all of the cushioning we give for kids when they fall. We put pillows under their rear ends and we pat them on the back for those things they should not be getting patted on the back for. But anyhow, I wanted to tell you, next week we've got a great guest, and please tune in tomorrow, next week, to American Tennis.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family, a King James and Uncle Sam. He's got the red, white, blue. America.
American Tennis, and reminding you that you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. See y'all next week. Thanks for listening.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.